The Athletic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 64th edition of On the Ball, a Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. I'm Michael Bailey. I hope this finds you safe and well. On the way, Farker's flexible friends banning the horizontal pass and insert potential bee sting pun here. We will work through all this and more with our guests this evening, former Norwich City press officer Ben Mouncer.
Hello, Michael.
And our own Scottish maestro, commentator and journalist Stuart Hodge.
Bonsoir, mes amis.
Thank you for joining us, guys. How are... Well, I hope everyone out there is well. How are we here on the pod? Ben, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you, Michael. And a belated but big happy birthday to you for the age, which I'm not going to mention unless you give me express permission
to. Yeah, go for it, yes.
40, the big 4-0.
40. I mean, I'm still high on the birthday element. I think by the time March properly kicks in, I'll, you know, be like, oh God, 40. That's old. But yeah, thank you. Although expected age of 26. So, you know, I'm going to revel in that.
I'm reveling in Chris Gorham's tweet. I thought that was magnificent. Like,
that was without doubt the second best tweet of 2021.
What was the first?
Obviously, Dan Brigham's tweet about Stuart Broad getting engaged. Did you see that? That genuinely went viral. The England cricketer Stuart Broad. Dan did this amazing tweet, which I mean, it's only kind of you only get it if you follow cricket. But
amazing.
He hasn't told me to bring that up, but it was an amazing tweet. But the Chris Gorham's one was a very close second. Just didn't have the wider kind of virality.
No, clearly not. It was my birthday. and XA, which if we extrapolate some journalist thoughts on XG, is an age that doesn't really happen. but we maybe won't get stuck into that. It was, thank you, Mr. Chris Gorham, for just a wonderful tweet and what a lovely man he is as well. So glad you're well. Ben, Stu, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I've actually just looked something up. Do you know Norwich have had two number 40s in their history very quickly? Just want to hazard a guess at who those were.
Oh, wow. What a question that is. No. Can we leave it until the end of the pod? And I'll try and think about it.
Yes.
Two number 40. So two players have worn 40.
I'll give you a clue. They won't have worn it very much.
Yeah. No. That's a great question. Or...
Aye. So I am well. I have seen quite a lot of Norwich City as well as many of our top of the table rivals recently. So,
yeah, a lot of Brentford.
And I also did a Swansea game. Kind of seen quite a bit of all of them.
Which in fairness,
part-time comms.
I was going to say, which in fairness deserves a shout out for your Kabango.
Everybody's going to think I'm sort of beating my own drum here.
I brought it up.
Am.
I brought it up.
No. And there was a hashtag that you used in the tweet, which I really liked. So what it was, Swansea City were playing Coventry. Ben Kabango was restored to the team, big towering defender. Connor comes in from Connor Hourihan, which is the correct pronunciation, by the way, not Hourihan. He's come out himself and said it. So he sends the ball in, Ben Kabango heads it in, and I say Ben Kabango with the opener, back with a bango, it's Ben Kabango for Swansea, which is a reference for if anybody doesn't know to I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor, the Arctic Monkeys hit of the late noughties.
Oh God, you're making me feel old. Wonderful moment.
Do you know what? As goal calls go, a lot of people script them. I think commentary's in the art of improvisation, and that was one where my producer was like peeing himself laughing at the other end of the talkback. So
you didn't script that?
Genuinely didn't script it.
In fairness, loads of people have accused you of scripting it, which is just the joy.
I have noticed.
You know, the joy of Twitter is also Birmingham City fans arguing amongst themselves as if they were each Norwich fans because they didn't want to look. So the joys of Twitter. And we all love it because we're all there. Right, before we crack on with the main pod and a bit more Norwich City chat, we have a message to do with The Athletic. And I'm going to bring in my special voice artist for this message. Please enjoy.
Am I like, can I just do this as a voiceover or am I actually going into it as part of the pod? Do you know what I mean?
I'm really hoping producer Ollie leaves this bit in now. Ben, over to you.
Okay. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/NorwichPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/NorwichPod.
Beautiful. We'll be doing
that was really well done. Can I just say, Michael, I've got a lot of respect for you as a journalist, but I love the bit where it says experienced football, all the best football writers, as well as, and then in my head I'm just going, Michael.
Yeah, well, to be fair, that's what I always say. so you know, I'm well aware. I tell you what, let's crack on, shall we, with this week's headline act. So this week I wrote a piece on Ollie Skip and Kenny McLean, and then Daniel Farke infiltrated it. But basically, I mean, there's a lot being written about Ollie Skip. I feel like we've spoken a lot about Ollie Skip, but my pieces at the moment, they're sort of, I'm writing one and then something spinning off to write another one off the back of it. There's probably a thread of about three or four pieces now all intertwined. But this week off the back of the recent ones, I wanted to just have a proper look at Ollie Skip and Kenny McLean's role basically as the duo in the two holding midfield roles of Daniel Farke's 4-2-3-1. You can read the piece on The Athletic. It is up and it is live right now. And I think I was able to look at them in recent games. We've had a chat about them on the podcast in recent weeks and really get a feel for what they're doing and why the role has evolved. But it didn't quite go to plan, I guess, because Daniel Farke made quite a crucial change at halftime against Wickham, which led to two goals in the second half and a 2-0 win in the end. Ollie Skip moving into the right-sided centre-back role of a back three, Kenny McCain being a bit more central, but in a pairing with Mario Vrančić, really, and the fullbacks ending up more as midfielders in terms of Aarons and Yiannoulis, and that Wickham couldn't really deal with that change. So, and the one thing that struck me, Ben, was that, having spoken to people after the game, that halftime change, I think, you know, a lot of the group were like, oh yeah, Daniel Farke nailed that, because it just changed the dynamic of the game. They literally, I know that it was sort of ebbed and flowed, but that those first 10 minutes of the second half, I think that Norwich could have blown Wickham away at that point.
Yeah, the quality we showed in just after halftime was extraordinary, really. We could have had four goals, I think, in that period, which was completely different to the first half, where obviously we were the kind of dominant force in the game, but we didn't actually really create what you'd call a clear-cut chance. So Daniel Farke obviously knew he had to change something. I think it's interesting because, to be honest, Michael, I didn't really pick up on the kind of structure change that you're spoken about, but obviously that it's a very fluid kind of system, isn't it? And the idea of getting Max Aarons more involved in a kind of more advanced areas with Buendia playing more centrally is an obvious route to kind of more attacking football for Norwich. But yeah, it made a whole load of difference. And to bring it back to Skip and McLean, it really goes to show that their roles this season, which, by the way, I think how they've performed and how that midfield double pivot works is one of the most interesting talking points this season. It shows that their kind of dynamism allows us to kind of completely change the way we're playing. And really kind of affect games in different way when you come up against a unique challenge like Wickham posed on Sunday.
Absolutely.
I think the main thing that struck me about the sort of change and that period that you mentioned after halftime, having watched a lot of Championship football this season, what you found is because of a very condensed COVID calendar, you're finding, and maybe the effect of no fans in the grounds, you're finding that games are having periods of tempo and then periods of lethargy. So what happened is after halftime, we had a period where we had real tempo. But the fact that it was a managerial change that had instigated that, I think is just, I mean, we've all sort of lauded Daniel Farke at various points for his proactiveness as a coach. I think this was a good example of where the coaching sort of side had part of it, but also just coming out after halftime with a period of sort of enthusiasm where we showed the quality difference between the two sides and made it absolutely stark with the type of football that we were playing. And that's what Norwich City are capable of. But also, I loved seeing that element of flexibility, because what it shows you is it shows you that you've got a manager that recognizes when something needs changed up rhythm-wise, you know? And I think there's been so many games where, yeah, we might have squeaked by the odd goal, but some games you kind of just feel like, are Norwich going to do it? You're asking yourself that question. More often than not, the answer has been yes. But what was shown in that game is we actually sort of took the impetus and went, no, do you know what? We're actually going to do it. And that, I think, was, I saw some sort of stuff on Twitter after the game from the journalists such as yourself saying that the players really recognised that as a big victory. There was a lot of cheering sort of in the dressing room after the game. And I think that just shows the collectiveness, the fact that the group is a real unit, really together. And it was just, it was a good game for many reasons. And obviously great to see Adam Ida getting a goal as well. I think it was just a great afternoon all round for Norwich City in lots of ways.
It was definitely a really big victory for them, especially with some of the stuff that happened the previous day as well. I'm glad you picked up on the fact you didn't necessarily spot the change at halftime, because the confession here, neither did I really. And it was quite difficult at pitch level anyway to see it, because all you're really doing is moving Ollie Slip slightly deeper and, as you say, allowing Max on a bit. And Kenny was still operating in the middle. And it emphasised the fluidity in their roles and the way, and I think this is what the piece gets into, which I'm really glad it does, by just looking at the heat maps of Tetti and Alex Tetti and Tom Tribal from three championship seasons ago, so Daniel Farke's first season in charge, but also then the role Kenny and Tetti, but also when Tom Tribal was in the role as well, because I think Tom played more than both of those two in the season Norwich went up as champions. How different the role is that Kenny and Ollie Skip are playing now, in terms of coming a lot wider, a lot more often, a lot more touches the ball wider as they fill in the fullbacks, but also covering as pairs on the same flank that maybe the other side is transitioning, and just the amount of covering and work and how it's a very well-oiled machine. You know, they know what they're doing very well. You can see how well coached they are, and as a pair. And obviously they also know what each other are doing and have sort of learned that and been coached that as well. And that is a great protection, really. And so I saw someone message me saying, well, if you replaced Kenny with Lucas Rupp, it'd be the same kind of thing, and you could then push Kenny on. But I don't know. I think Kenny's done so well in recent weeks. I'm not saying Lucas hasn't got that, but there's probably a more defensive awareness I get from Kenny, maybe. I don't know. But it's really interesting how that those two roles have evolved. Although they didn't win the game on Sunday, they've evolved hugely, and it's great to see that progress and thought and change take place after last season. What I guess will also be interesting is how they then adapt that, should, touch wood, Norwich go up, who gets to do it, and whether they can do it in the same way, and whether that is a real key piece to doing something better in the Premier League. We don't know Ollie Skip's future. Obviously, we've spoken about it a lot. We're going to keep talking about it. It's not going to go away, this subject, until probably August. I am conscious of whether, if Tottenham did change manager, whether that might affect things, because at the moment I don't know if Jose Mourinho really want to bother with Ollie Skip next season in the Premier League. You get someone else in and maybe they would. You don't know. We'll have to see.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Likewise, Ben, have we seen enough from Kenny McLean that he is able to do the same job in the Premier League? I mean, last season we came out of it thinking, well, actually, he's done as well as anyone really this year.
Yeah, I thought he was good last season, largely in a bad team. I don't know, it's interesting, isn't it? It all kind of comes back to, are we going to play with this kind of shape and fluidity in the Premier League when we're coming up against teams who are going to obviously put us under a lot more pressure? It's going to be interesting to see how this kind of the stuff we've been talking about comes to the fore against Brentford, who are obviously the leading scorers in the division. You know they're going to get into more advanced positions than certainly Wickham did. So it's going to be interesting to see how those roles do it. But I think I've always liked Kenny McLean. I think he's got some unfair criticism from Norwich fans during his time here. not so much recently, because he's been obviously excellent recently. But I just think he's a really dynamic player. And as you say, Michael, his defensive kind of awareness, positioning, wasn't something that was immediately obvious to me when he first joined the club. But it's something maybe he has developed and Daniel Farke has sort of helped him with.
There's a couple of points I want to pick up on what both of you were saying. So first thing is, with Kenny McLean specifically, I remember having a chat with you, Michael, on a different channel when Kenny McLean signed for the club. And what I said at that point, I was asked the question that night, is he a six or is he an eight? And I says, he can do both. And to be honest, for the most part, we've seen a lot of the eight, but we hadn't seen much of the number six. Now, what he's doing is he's proven that he's got that in his locker, and he did already have that, albeit at a different level, in the Scottish Premiership when he was playing with Aberdeen. But I think the other thing that has happened is, and we spoke about this at the start of the season in terms of the recruitment and the way that Norwich were looking at it, particularly in the midfield area, is we have totally changed our setup there. We are a lot less open. The football's not the same verve-filled, swashbuckling, enjoyable orchestra that we had going on 2 years ago when we sort of got up, and not as dramatic, none of that. But I'll tell you what, it's probably a lot more effective. This team, I reckon, would beat that team. And the main thing that I would point out is, if you look, particularly when you're talking about the way that the midfield players are covering for the fullbacks, that is a big, big area of focus that you can see Norwich City were getting exploited time and time and time again in the Premier League, where teams were running over them whenever Max Aaron's bombed on, or whoever was playing in the other side, usually Jamal, would do that. Now, what you're seeing now is, whenever Max goes forward, all he skips, first thought is immediately, right, I'm covering that position. Right. And that is something that seems to be innate and inbuilt. Now, with that in mind, I think that Norwich City have made themselves a lot less open, a lot tougher to beat, and a lot tougher to score against as a result of that. And it also kind of gives me hope for, you said if, Michael, I'm going to say when Norwich City do go up. When Norwich go up, I think this sort of rendition and this style of team has more chance of sort of punching above its weight, because we're a lot less open, we're a lot less easy to score against and get at. Plus, there's also the added fact that a few of the younger players have that extra sort of year or two's experience, and that could really benefit us. But there's no doubt that Ollie Skip and Kenny McLean have been absolutely pivotal to that. And also, in fact, I'll throw it back at you guys, best Norwich central midfield pairing since who?
We'll throw it out to the listeners, let us know. But I think Lambert didn't, are we allowed to talk about Paul Lambert? Paul Lambert didn't really play with the midfield pairing, so he mostly played with the diamonds. So
Howson and Tetti was pretty good in the Premier League at times.
That was going to be mine.
Let us know, everyone.
But I think what Daniel Farke is doing with this pair is pretty groundbreaking, actually. It's kind of, in certainly at Championship level, to kind of, he's almost redefining what a holding midfielder is, because they're doing so much in possession, out of possession. It's generally made me kind of look at football completely differently, the way we've done that this season. It's really great stuff. One area they both need to improve is their, I don't want to call quality in the final third, but maybe their ability to make an impact in the final third and get into the positions where they can make an impact. Kenny McLean got in a great position against Wickham, and his shot wasn't that great. I think Farker said he wants Ollie Skip to maybe push forward a bit more, which he has been doing a bit more recently. But if they can somehow be the complete central midfielders by chipping in with a couple more goals and positive impacts in the final third, then it's really like the perfect midfield too, I think.
I might call you out a little bit there, Ben, because Kenny's had an assist in his last two games and is so much more productive in the final third than Ollie Skip, who does, I think he would, the fact he's 19, I think in maybe five or six years' time, if he's doing that as well, he will be top of the class in terms of what he's got. So, but definitely. Hey, we all want
I'm more thinking of situations where maybe we've moved down the flanks and we're looking for somebody to be on the end of a... It's more of like an attacking instinct to maybe get a goal.
The late burst into the box. Yeah, the late run into the box. I think that is a factor, but really interesting comment for you, Ben, about the fact that they are redefining, because I think there's always this clamour to say a midfielder is this role, right? If you look at both of them, they are just... They're kind of doing such a plethora of different things that they're screening at times, they're box-to-box at times, you know what I mean? They're taking the role as the sort of primary playmaker at times. There's various different sort of things that are happening between them, but it's the synergy between that and the wing-backs as well. That's what's really interesting for me.
And the centre-backs.
Yeah.
But that's exactly that, because in the first half, again, although it didn't really work necessarily in terms of it was still so interesting to see that how the other of the two pivots would be positioned between the centre backs and how if the ball was the other side, then they would allow basically Ben Gibson to step out, because Kenny McLean was basically sat in as the other centre back. And I think it was months ago when I first saw Ollie Skip repeatedly coming into the fullback position, I was like, and as soon as you pick up on it, you're like, well, God, that really makes sense. And then you see it all sort of map out. I agree with you, Ben. It's remarkable, really. And like I say, I suppose a lot was made of Pep Guardiola bringing in inverted fullbacks and all this sort of stuff. We're almost seeing a variation of that with the holding midfielders, in a way.
And Michael, he's doing that with one player who's playing in his first season of professional football and another player who cost £200,000 from Aberdeen. That's like...
Yeah, exactly. And I think the one thing about all this is how good is Ollie Skip going to be as well, which just keeps floating around in the back of my mind, but we don't know the answer to that yet.
He would definitely benefit from a season of regular football in the Premier League at a team who are going to be maybe under the cosh more than Tottenham. So 100%. Let's hope that he finds a space at a team like that next season.
I've said this all along. Don't rule it out. Don't just assume he's going back at Spurs and that'll be that. And I'll keep saying that. Right. Well, that was fun. Also, just on the defensive record, Norwich have actually been obviously a lot tighter this year, conceded fewer goals. I noticed from midweek, and again, dig out this piece, that is really much more about the control Norwich are exuding, the lack of time behind in games. They've been behind in one game since Boxing Day, which was obviously Swansea, but that they're not having to scrap back and recover themselves, which is very different from 2 years ago, and hopefully something that they can build on. Read that piece. Let's move on, shall we? Two things we are not going to talk about. These are the things that have happened and deserve acknowledgement, but we are only going to acknowledge them by stating how we are not going to talk about them. Makes sense? Good. We also only have 3 minutes. Strict rule. 3 minutes, boys. Cue the dramatic music, please, producer Ollie. Right, here we go. This week, we are not going to talk about... I'm not going to talk about beating Birmingham. First half was fairly rubbish, but again, that control element... Norwich came good in the end, and Ben Gibson's back from his injury, which is great. It was a lovely tweet from Todd Cantwell on that as well, which was nice to see. Likewise, poor old Todd, who seems to be getting these niggling injuries, so he's under 50% likely to face Brentford, which is a bit of a blow, but we're not going to talk about that. You guys, Ben?
What am I not talking about?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to... I don't... I was interested...
Three minutes, Ben. Go.
Gareth Ainsworth's description of Wickham's tactics as a deep press, which I've never heard before. A deep press.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. It was a low block.
Was that a thing? It was a low block.
No, they were just sat there. I mean, they occasionally pressed Norwich, but it was very occasional. And then the amazing sight of five substitutes in one go. And all of a sudden, he was like, right, we're going to high press now. And away they went. They just went high press.
And actually, it worked because we were in danger. And so we've credited Daniel Farke for changing the game. But actually, credit then to Gareth Ainsworth for changing it back again.
I mean, his side can only cope with a high press for 30 minutes. I mean, wow, or 20 minutes. That's literally what he said. We can't do it all game. It's like, well, okay. I don't know. Maybe they'd have got themselves ahead in the first 20 minutes and then they could have been in a low block whilst 1-0 up for the remaining 70 minutes. I don't know. But there we go. Anyway, it's only Wickham, so we're not going to talk about that.
I'm not going to talk about the fact that Russell Martin made a very interesting comment on Sky Sports about the relationship between Emi Buendia and Teemu Pukki. And he said that there's no anxiety for him or Pukki when they get into attacking areas. And I just loved that choice of words because I thought it kind of summed up what Norwich need to do next season. Because if we go into the Premier League and we get nervous anytime we get into those attacking areas, and that is the way that it sort of manifests, then we're going to end up not scoring from the fewer number of chances that we've got. Whereas if we manage to show that same confidence, then it could be pivotal next season.
But we're not going to talk about next season yet. I'm going to ban that myself. what else do we have? Pep Guardiola. Don't want to talk about Pep Guardiola. Apparently he loves watching Daniel Farke when he relaxes. I mean, I don't know if it's exactly what he said, but Daniel Farke...
He loves watching Daniel Farke.
Well, his team. What we do know now is that they speak a lot and they're good friends, and that Daniel Farke really enjoyed being asked about Pep Guardiola. I'm sure he did.
Not going to talk about the fact that Daniel Farke and Gareth Ainsworth are clearly in some sort of speed metal band together, judging by their antics after the game yesterday.
They love each other.
Thomas Frank as well. I don't want to criticise Onel Hernandez too much. Obviously, this is his first game back. I actually thought physically, he looks in really good shape. I don't know if you think this, Michael, having watched. I think he looks like sharp. He looks kind of the physical threat that Onel offers. But obviously, in that period, at the beginning of the second half, when we were creating those chances, he didn't show himself up in the best of light. And I often think with Onel, the idea of Hernandez is better than the kind of reality. But I think and it's interesting to see how he's going to dovetail with Yiannoulis. I think that's interesting. And whether that will actually work, whether I believe that can work, I'm not sure if I do. But first game back, I still think he has something to offer. And let's not judge him too quickly on heavy touches and missed opportunities.
I have to say, I thought, you know, I wanted him to do much better. I could have seen him coming off, but by the same token, as a performance and as a chance to get some minutes under his belt and, you know, hopefully a chance to find some sharpness, I would still start him against Brentford, I have to say, personally, because I've almost wasted it.
I hope this comment comes back to bite me in the bum, but he's a player that can affect games in the Championship. I don't see him doing that much in the Prem.
Ouch. I think that's everything. The music is certainly finished. Don't want to talk about Norwich cleaning the dressing room. They've done it everywhere they've been, but Wickham decided to highlight it, which is very good of them. Norwich doing it with a bit of class, which is nice. And Paul Lamp has left Ipswich, but we're not going to talk about that, obviously.
By the way, just to point out, that was after his first run of successive wins since Halloween.
And yes, the timing was curious. But as we know, and as you'll have read on The Athletic, we think there's a takeover coming at Ipswich Town, but don't really care, to be honest. Well, good for them. They can turn up with their banknotes again. That'll be exciting. right, that's the end of things I don't want to talk about. There is something that I did want to talk about now, which is just to pass on our thoughts and condolences to Glenn Roeder's family and friends. The former Norwich City manager died. It was announced on Sunday at the age of just 65. Obviously this popped up on the radio while I was driving back from Wickham yesterday, and I mean 65 really feels like no age, and we're all aware of the brain tumor that Glenn Roeder had while he was West Ham manager, and all the battles he had to go through to, and then coming back into the game and doing a job he so clearly loved. A lot of his, I was slightly wary of when the news broke, because I know the reaction a lot of people in this part of the world have to Glenn Roeder. I've been well aware of that. But I certainly wanted to pass on our wishes and thoughts and just say that, I mean, I remember Glenn Roeder got the Norwich job. He was announced his press conference the morning after I had a phone call from Archant saying I'd got the job on the sports desk at Norwich, my first journalism job. So that was an amazing moment for me. So happy at that. I only got it because someone else turned it down, by the way. But I don't know if that was the case for Glenn Roeder. So I always felt a little bit inextricably linked with Glenn, because he was the first manager who I sort of dealt with in terms of at Norwich City in the job, having been a supporter, obviously, since, you know, six or whatever. And
who was it to deal say. With? Like, was it,
well, this was
he,
this was the point, really. It was a real initial divergence, I think, from being a supporter to being a journalist, because Glenn was great to deal with. He was a lovely guy to deal with us, and he'd give you some good answers. He'd have his moments, but generally it was great. And I'm well aware of obviously what happened around the club, which has to be said wasn't in, there's a lot of things that happen with individuals, and you know, I know that Darren Huckabee obviously was mortified with how it ended for him at Norwich, and held Glenn responsible for that, but so much of it was also around the club at the time and so many other factors. And I think it's been generally good to see that actually that has been put in its place. Like when it's such horrible news And as I said, our thoughts with everyone who knew Glenn really well, and were being personally devastated by his loss. I think that is by far and away more important. And actually reflecting on that and how much he brought, and the stories of how he affected people in so many good ways, I think it was just nice to see that resonating more. So I just wanted to make a point of mentioning him, really.
The one thing that I would say is, for all that some people have a sort of negative vibe on his time as Norwich boss, there was loads of good stuff that he did. I did a piece, an interview with John Kennedy a couple of years back, and it was Glenn Roeder who signed him. And John Kennedy was obviously devastated by injuries, had to retire early. But Glenn Roeder really, really made him feel that he wanted him, really, really made him feel welcome. And John sent me a text earlier, and John just says he's a terrific guy. Really sorry to hear the news, you know. But John also, in that interview with me, reinforced like just how hungry Glenn Roeder was when he was like wanting his man, like trying to recruit his man. And even though maybe some aspects of his time in his Norwich City tenure weren't ideal, I mean, this was a guy that did his best for the football club. And yeah, as you say, mate, stuff like this transcends football.
Okay, time for this week's Centrefold, which is basically this week a plug to read my piece on horizontal passes. Now, if I can take you back to the Stoke game when Norwich won 4-1, but at one point it went to 2-1 because Dimitris Yiannoulis, in I think it was his third game for the club, played a wonderfully ridiculous ball right across his own penalty area, straight to Nick Powell, who obviously then beat Tim Krul because he had a free shot at the goalkeeper, completely exposed. Everyone was like, what are you doing? Well, I spoke to Dimitris, as you would have heard actually in last week's pod, and he was trying to clip the ball over Nick Powell, but it brought this comment after the game from Daniel Farke saying horizontal passes are banned. They are one of my principles in football, basically, to ban horizontal passes. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, Norwich are the most possession-based side in the Championship. They love keeping the ball. How could you possibly go around saying, yeah, keep the ball, but don't, whatever you do, play one square? And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I asked Daniel about it. Daniel Farke, that is. Shouldn't use his first name, should I? And it was a really interesting answer in terms of how what it really means is no one can play that horizontal pass, a pass across the pitch, unless they can guarantee it's going to reach a teammate, which obviously requires it to be quite short distance, you know, quite close in. Or if it's going to be a distance, it needs to be in the air. Because basically what you can't do is have someone cutting it out, because there's no way of protecting yourself if a pass like that gets caught out. And as soon as I'd sort of processed that and worked it out, I then watched a few games, and it was remarkable how Norwich go about their passing yet don't play square passes. And you can see them turning down or going backwards, and Norwich only play a third of their passes forward. They play by far and away the most passes of anyone, yet only a third of them are in forward direction. Obviously they're also turning them down, you know, unless they can guarantee them horizontally. So it was a lovely, ended up being quite a deep dive into how Norwich sort of go about their passing structures. But it's really interesting, and what struck me, Ben, is once you've seen that and see the thinking, you can't kind of unsee it, and it's you kind of appreciate how much detail is really going into how Norwich, they don't just sit there passing the ball around and looking for someone to play the ball to, which I know sounds obvious, but there is so much little detail that goes into it.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I think when I saw those quotes from Daniel Farke, I went through the same thought process as you, Michael. Oh, that's really interesting. And then obviously you went away and wrote a piece about it. I think it shows also how Farke has adapted as a coach during his time at Norwich. I think in especially in that first season, there are so many games where it felt like we were just passing side to side and there wasn't that penetration. Obviously, the idea of passing it across your own box horizontally is one of the oldest things you learn, and one of the oldest rules in like football. You know, you learn that when you're playing Sunday league stuff. But actually, I think it's a lot more interesting when you're thinking about it in kind of a progressive context, when you're in possession and moving the ball forward. And I think in football, possession-oriented football has kind of moved on from the Guardiola-Barcelona kind of era of tiki-taka, side passes, absolute possession, to kind of this kind of style of possession where you are moving the ball forward more quickly, looking for more forward passes, always looking for kind of to progress the ball up the pitch. I think one of Daniel Farke's coaching kind of, I don't say heroes, but obviously he worked very closely with Thomas Tuchel at Dortmund, and that's a style I think that he implements. Maurizio Sarri is famous for kind of this vertical passing style that we talk about. So I think it is, you know, outside of just the Norwich bubble, it is a kind of trend. But again, it's really interesting. One example for it for me is when, how many times we've seen Grant Hanley in possession, like feign and cut inside, when you think, oh, the easy thing to do would be to just pass it across to another player like so usually Gibson or Aarons. But actually, he just feigns and drops the shoulder and comes inside and then plays a much more kind of progressive pass up the pitch.
Especially when he's allowed to, like Middlesbrough did. Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed that piece. Let's rattle on, shall we, too. This is Just Like Fantasy Football, which obviously means Q John Motson, who's just going to say the same words.
This is almost fantasy football.
Pretty much. We are recording as we usually do on Monday, but it's quite the midweek in store. It's quite a week, in fact. So first up, we have Wednesday tea time, 5:30 kickoff. Don't miss it. Brentford at Carrow Road. Then it's Luton who visit Carrow Road on Saturday. And I think Norwich owe them one, if not two. So as always, and maybe more keenly than usual, let's paint a picture of the forthcoming 7 days and then let you laugh at what we've created with the valuable gift of hindsight. So let's paint this picture. Oh, it's a cracking game in store, isn't it, Stu? This Brentford game is going to be a cracker.
Cannot wait. Now that we've said that, it'll finish. No. Do you know what, right? This is the point where I have to come with an element of contrition, my cap in my hand, metaphorically. Last time I was on this podcast, I had just commentated on Brentford going to Borough. And now, bear in mind, this is Neil Warnock's Borough team, right? Where it's like, oh, it's going to be tough to beat, you know. Right, that was a Neil Warnock impression, by the way. I think it was very good. So they absolutely destroyed them. Like, it was really, really blew me away just how good they were. And then I went on your podcast and a couple others in the week after it, and I just said, yeah, Brentford are going to win the league. Proclaimed it from my wherever I was standing or sitting, usually. And at that point, I was carried away, I think, by what I'd just seen. I now believe that Norwich City are hopefully going to see...
Don't jinx Norwich.
No, Steve.
What are you doing? No, thanks. No, not going to happen. You've already done it once earlier in the pod. You already did it once. You said, oh, no, that when they go up. No. Sorry.
I'm blasé about it. I think it will happen. I won't say the second thing. But I also did call on this podcast in January last year that we would get relegated. So,
you can say 100 points and 100 goals if you want, but it has to be said with your tongue in your cheek.
Okay, right. Well, what I will say is Brentford are really, really good. Ivan Toney is red hot right now. Yeah, I've watched Brentford quite a lot and I've been so, so impressed by just the style with which they attack the game. And it's kind of reminiscent a wee bit of the Norwich team of 2 years ago, not necessarily stylistically, but just the sort of entertainment value that's packed in. Any Brentford game is going to be, I mean, you're pretty much guaranteed goals, and that's very exciting as a football fan. So hopefully there is some goals in the game against Norwich City, but I think for Norwich City, the way you want the game to go is you want us to have control of the game and it not to be too dramatic. And that would prove that we are doing a good, effective job. So in a way, even though we're really looking forward to it and it should be a cracking game, the more boring it can be or the less sort of fluctuating kind of dramatic moments there are, I think the better Norwich City's outcome will be.
It's been interesting against the better sides that the games have actually done that. They've really fluctuated from 15 minutes to 15 minute spells for each side. I mean, I have to say, Watford, Bournemouth, Swansea and Brentford are by some distance the best sides Norwich have played this season. I don't think there's much between them, actually, but just in terms of the quality, you can just sense how different it is. I mean, the bit in me that I probably can't repress, which is the eight-year-old that went to my first game as a Norwich fan, just has Thomas Frank sitting there going, yeah, there's no outstanding team in the division this season, when Norwich actually had more points than Leeds did last season when he said Leeds were outstanding. I just want to go, you know what, Thomas, we're just going to go and beat you by a couple and then, you know, see you later. I know football doesn't work like that, but there's just that seed in me. And then there's also a bit where you just hope that seed's in the squad on Wednesday and they just go and put in one of those statement wins. Ellen Road, Leeds United, that sort of statement. Yeah. There's a bit. Now, don't get me wrong. If it's a goalless draw, happy days, because that's a cracking result, really, all told. But there's just that bit in me, why I couldn't be a footballer, because I'd be too emotionally drained by that thought that I wouldn't be able to carry out the routine, mundane basics of a football match to win it. Ben, I appreciate you laughing at that.
I'm worried about the left, Michael, and that's not a comment on the political landscape in this country. I'm worried about...
Please don't.
I'm worried about our left-hand side. First of all, the absence of Todd Cantwell. It sounds like he's going to miss this game again. And obviously against Wickham, it didn't really matter ultimately, but I feel like just his ability to pull teams out of shape and his movement and his obviously quality in possession, we're a worse side without the Todd Cantwell who's been playing in recent weeks in our team. And then I think it represents a new challenge for Dimitris Yiannoulis as well, who defensively hasn't been put under a huge amount of pressure yet. And I think a lot of Brentford's kind of dynamism in the final third comes from Brian Mbeumo and Ivan Toney and the kind of in those kind of areas where he might be a bit more susceptible. But I'm not saying he's not going to rise to that challenge. I'm just interested to see how he does against a team who have scored 14 more goals than us in the division and obviously are the division's leading scorers.
I think it's going to be interesting how Brentford construct their midfield as well, because they have different personnel and they're a different team depending on which personnel they deploy. So, I mean, in terms of the attacking sort of the front three kind of played regardless of which of the sort of main four cast members, including obviously former Norwich man Sergio Canos, that they tend to play. There's usually a sort of specific way that they're going to go about it. But the midfield three, it depends which personnel he deploys, the way that Brentford tend to play it. So if you play De Silva, it tends to be a bit slower, whereas Jensen's a bit more of a box-to-box player. Godos, by the way, is a really, really good footballer. He's really talented. And Vitaly Janelt scored a brilliant goal. Yeah, it was a really, really good goal. But I think the other thing about Brentford is they've got the ability to mix it up. And that's something that Norwich City have dealt with much, much better this season. But Brentford, for all that they play with a lot of attacking gusto, and they do play some nice fluid football, they're not scared to launch it. And Ivan Toney's winner against Stoke came from a flick on from Mbeumo. And Toney, obviously, as he's done all season, 25 goals now.
Stu, you've watched more of Ivan Toney than me over like the course of full matches. I'm slightly concerned about how his kind of physicality and mobility might concern our two central defenders who have been obviously excellent, but maybe mobility might trouble them.
It's going to be an interesting watch, I think, and the sternest examination of what's been an absolutely brilliant centre-back pairing's credentials. I think this Brentford front three are going to provide that. And as I say, it's the kind of second wave of it from the midfield. For all that we're eulogising and rhapsodising about how good the midfield two have been at doing a variety of jobs, this is going to be another test for them again to see how they can do that against this particular team. And it's going to be really interesting tactically. The other thing I would say about this is, for all that we were saying earlier on about how championship games have kind of peaks and troughs in terms of tempo and stuff, this feels like a game where both teams are going to be going at it hammer and tongs. Like the hunger and the vigour to get the result has got to be there. I mean, this is Brentford's chance to stay right, like sort of lay down a marker, title sort of credentials.
I was going to say, it will be really interesting how Brentford take it on, because if they see Norwich in their sights, then they will go for it, won't they? But it depends where they really view their challenge, I suppose, because there's no incentive for the game to be cancelled out, because Brentford would need to win it if they really want to be finishing above Norwich. It will be interesting if that is their mindset. I mean, if they do come and think, well, actually, you know, we need to be finishing, it will be an indicator, I guess, of where they see the rest of their season going. I don't for one moment think they're going to come and just sort of try and be quite secure and you know, take a point, which obviously isn't how it actually manifestly plays out, but would be in the back of their minds, I guess. So that will be a kind of interesting dynamic on their part, because to be brutally honest, Norwich will be fine with a draw.
Yeah, and the thing is, it comes back to what I said, is that in a way, the more boring the game, probably the better the outcome for Norwich, whereas Brentford, especially David Raya at the back, really has a clanger in him. I've commentated in various games this season where he's gifted a goal away. But the other flip side of that, Brentford's response in some of those games, they obviously came back from an early setback, 27 seconds, the goal at the weekend, came back to win. They had the blip of three defeats. And then they've obviously picked back up again and they're sort of really going at it. So having come so close last year, the difference with Brentford this season, and the reason I think they're going to be top two, is because the mentality just seems to be there that they're going to try and get over the line. And that comes from having the attack and hunger that you were discussing there, Michael.
We've spoken a lot about Brentford in recent weeks, I must admit. But you're right. And they have actually, I think they've picked up more points from losing positions than anyone else in the Championship this season. So I think that kind of underpins that, although some would argue and like my piece about control, that maybe they're having to work harder to get back into decent positions. And if you start getting twitchy, then it can become more of an issue. And then Luton. I think
they're talking about Norwich this much on the Brentford podcast.
Well, no, because there's no outstanding team in the division. So it's just like any other game, isn't it, really? Which again is, you know, probably why they'll be perfectly focused. Then of course it's Luton, which I guess in a bit like this whole conversation will just get forgotten, and then Norwich will probably lose 1-0. I do worry that Luton have got Norwich's number this year, Ben.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? The only kind of predictable thing about Luton is their unpredictability. I think before they beat us in the league this season, the weekend before, they lost 4-0 to Cardiff. So no one would have seen that result coming. No, as you said, Michael, they've obviously beaten us twice this season already. So yeah, obviously all the focus at the moment is on Brentford, but yeah, it's difficult to figure out what kind of Luton are going to turn up. They got a great comeback win against Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. Mid-table side. Yeah, who knows, but I fancy us.
You sound excited. Yeah, I mean, what Norwich will need is obviously 10 players out, because I think minimum, that's what happened in both games against Luton. So it'd be nice to actually play them with a full strength team, or closer than it has been in the other cases. That you'll have to do that in terms of your predictions. I don't know what that was, but that was basically us talking about those games, and we will see what happens. It'll be interesting to find out. I think that's the most important thing. So
one of my predictions is that I will get angry on multiple occasions at the scheduling of arguably the two best teams in the Championship playing at 5:30 on a Wednesday night, which is nothing short of disgraceful.
We had this last week. I mean, it means it'll be live on Sky, which it wouldn't have been anyway, I think.
Also, just we're going to pick up 6 points. I'm just going to be blasé to annoy you too.
What are you saying? Are you talking? Do you mean Brentford as we or Norwich?
Oh, come on, that's not even a question.
On that note, it is time for On the Ball this week. If you're yet to do so, please make sure you subscribe via your podcast player of choice. The pod is available free for everyone on your usual player, and then ad-free to subscribers of The Athletic via our app. Please leave a review and a rating if you so wish, and please spread the word of our efforts across the Norwich City world. Get in touch. Please do ask a question, propose any topics you wish. Sling me a direct message on Twitter at Michael J. Bailey. I've got plenty to get through over the coming weeks. In the meantime, a big thank you to our guests this evening. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Stu, pleasure as always.
Merci beaucoup, mon ami.
We will be back next week with another On the Ball and Norwich City podcast from The Athletic. Until then, enjoy a brilliant week and never mind the danger. And we are clear. Ben and Stuart, welcome to Wits End. Happy? Everyone happy?
Yeah, that was long, it felt, but good. Not in a bad way.
Yeah, I think people will be at their wits end with me talking about the bees. So.
I mean, I said that comment about, we've spoken so much about Brentford. It feels like we have, but we are playing Brentford this week. So, it's kind of...
Like, yeah, exactly. We're here to talk about football, aren't we?
I hope it's the last we speak of them. Actually, this week, above next week, obviously. Maybe we won't want to talk about it. Who knows? Welcome to Wits End, everyone. Welcome all you Twitterkers. If any of you have stumbled across this for the first time and are wondering what's going on, listen to On the Ball podcast number 42. It went live on September the 8th, and it is all explained there. You can email this part of the podcast directly, Twitterkers, Twitter, K-E-R-S, at iCloud.com, or use the hashtag Twitterkers on Twitter. You just don't need to say what it's referring to. Just include the hashtag and we'll find it. Gents, think about anything you want to bring up. Obviously, the outstanding website, twitterkers.co.uk, which has been devised by someone out there in the world, is wonderful. And it had a big banner out on there this morning saying Happy Keith Day, which will be because on Twitter, I tried to thank everyone for my birthday wishes. And for some reason, my autocorrect corrected it to thanking everyone for my Keith Day messages. I don't understand how that happened. And B, a lot of Keiths were delighted because it was like, oh, Keith Day, my day, brilliant. And so I think I inadvertently spread a bit of joy. And now February the 28th every year should be Keith Day.
I do find the Apple, like the iPhone autocorrect thing confusing sometimes, because I'm writing like a very kind of common standard word and it autocorrects to something like Keith.
I've got a weird thing that happens in it where, like, I've misspelled the word with once. And what it does is it's saved my misspelling of it, which was W-I-R-H. So now I'll say that I'm going out with loads of people.
Well, I mean, it took me probably 3.5 years of Daniel Farker's 4-year reign so far for my phone to learn that Farker is a word. It was ridiculous. I would not accept it as a word. It reminds me of the transcription software I used for a period where it would automatically transcribe what people were saying just to save me some time. But I had to stop using that because the Norwich City head coach was going to slip in with something that wouldn't be printable. So I've decided to ditch that.
I've used similar tools, Michael, and I've run into similar problems. Transcription is the bane of my life, and I'm sure it is for any journalist.
It is indeed. Right, we've got some tweets. Let's just rattle through these because we won't be long with Wits End this week because it's been a long old pod. But I did want to, just on autocorrects, it reminds me of Sebastian Besong's clean sheet declaration.
Absolutely, yeah.
His hashtag, clean sheet. It didn't quite work out like that, letters-wise. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but it did become a wonderful running joke and maybe should continue. You know, Norwich are providing all the opportunities at the moment with their number of clean sheets. So maybe that should be introduced. Philip Arthurton, I wanted to give a shout out for Philip because he tweeted the other day that he was waiting for the new On The Ball podcast because he's been listening to the whole thing from the start. He discovered it only 4 months ago and still listened to it first one through. So not even at the time the games were happening and he's listened to them all.
Outstanding.
I'm not sure about the exact order, but this is a special Wits End shout out for you, Philip. I hope you've now discovered Wits End. And you are now an honorary Twitterer, of course, like all of us.
To paraphrase another comment, I'll just nick off another commentator. Take a bow, son. one thing that I want to bring up right now at this point, before we go any further or finish up, is Norwich City number 40s, right? So have any answers, gentlemen?
We didn't finish it in the main pod.
That's all right. That just gives people the hook to come on here.
Leroy Leiter, was he a 40 now?
He wasn't a 40. Right, now I'll give you a clue because it is quite obscure. Both players are still playing locally, but for different teams.
Is it someone like Cameron King?
Cameron King is one.
Yes.
Who? Cameron King?
Cameron King.
Damon Lathrop, is he still playing?
Are they both at Lynn?
Nope. The other one's playing locally at a different club.
Okay.
Locally, though.
So it must be a decent standard of player. Also more recent than Cameron King.
I'm not going to get it.
Initials, Stu?
AP.
McCoy?
That's Alfie Payne.
Alfie Payne. He was at Kings Lynn, wasn't he? But he's obviously not now.
I think he's at Lowestoft now.
Is it?
Yeah. So we're telling you, Twitterers, as a first reveal, we'll have to remember to give those answers in the main pod next week because we asked the question in the main pod.
Well, no, that's the exclusivity granted to Twitterers, right?
Lucky people. Yeah. Time is rattling, doing whatever it does time. So I'm going to have to apologise to Charlie. I was really going to do the email today, Charlie Balcott, but I'm going to have to apologise. Also, I don't know if it's the same Charlie Balcott who is related to Alan Balcott. It might be because a Charlie Balcott has written a piece on Brexit and football at mediarights.law. So give that a check out.
Hi, that's really highbrow stuff. Also, by the way, has Charlie replaced Ollie as the person we apologised to?
Yeah, not deliberately, but that is just how it's happened because you keep...
You just upset that many people, Michael.
The problem you've got, Michael, where your argument falls down is that this isn't a radio show. This podcast can go on for a really...
No one listening to this wants...
The concept of running out of time is just false.
Running out of time. Shush, Ben, we're running out of time. We can't go into this now. So the only other thing I wanted to do is say happy birthday, Martin O'Neill. He's 69 today. This factors into a tweet from Richard because we were discussing about the greatest ever Norwich City goal. He says, no further discussion required, Richard. And he's posted four pictures, taken from Martin O'Neill's 89th minute winner against Ipswich, which would be December, I can't see it exactly, 28th, 1980. I should probably know. In fact, it's folded over, and this is from the EDP. Malcolm Robertson wrote the article. How wonderful. 1980 or 81, I'm going to guess, from my memory. Norwich beat Ipswich. I have never seen this goal. So in terms of greatest Norwich City goals, I think it was a pile driver, but I don't think I've seen it. So I'm going to need to see this Martin O'Neill goal and judge whether it's the greatest, best Norwich
Will there be goal. TV footage of it? That is the question.
I don't know. Imagine if not.
Not all games were covered by TV then.
Why don't you get Martin on the phone, Michael, to get him to talk you through it for a piece for The Athletic?
I'll ask him. It's his birthday today, though, so he's probably busy.
I could do even better than that. I could do a rubbish Martin O'Neill impression, my second rubbish managerial impression in the podcast.
Go on, you got 10 seconds.
Oh, well, ask me a question, the Lance, and I'll say, absolutely wonderful.
That's lovely. That's much better than your Neil Warnock impression, which, by the way, anyone can do a default Neil Warnock impression by sounding slightly northern and ending me at the end. So, you know, he's definitely the best footballer I've ever seen for me. No, I can't do it now.
Just great. Brilliant.
I love Delia me. That's it. That's the one. I love Delia. That's it. Anyway, let's end this. Any other business, anyone?
Well, I was going to mention, actually, Stuart brought up that Sunderland game and Bassong. That game, my dad did the crossbar challenge and hit the crossbar twice.
Whoa!
Three unreal.
Amazing. He won, presumably?
Yeah. Oh, he won twice. Yeah.
Did he get double the prize, Ben?
I can't remember what the prize was, but it was great because I was watching from the press box. First one just sort of went in the goal or whatever. I'm just thinking, yeah, there's no way he's going to do this. Second one just sort of skimmed the bar and it was like, hey, from the Barkley. Yeah. And then the third one just rattled into the crossbar.
Yes.
It was absolutely brilliant.
No, but it wasn't just that, right? It was, I know Billy personally, obviously through knowing Ben, he took like a total bow in front of the Barkley. Absolutely loved the moment. It was legendary.
This is pertinent because I was thinking the other week, like halftime entertainment, we obviously there is none now because there's no one to entertain. So it's just one of those things that I think we'll all be grateful for when it comes back, and probably a whole lot more appreciative of someone doing a stupid game at halftime. Because you know what? Look at it. It's happening. It's amazing. So there we go. On that note, we're going to wrap it up, I think, unless you got anything else, Stu.
No, that's fine. I've spoken more than my quota.
I will end any other business. Stu, thank you so much for joining. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, hopefully, mate. I'm here at your disposal ever and always.
I love it. Ben, top man, thank you very much.
Great fun, as always, Michael. Thank you.
I love it. Thanks, everyone. Get involved. Twitterkers@icloud.com. #Twitterkers. That's it. Time's up. Thanks, all. Until next time, as was pointed out on Twitter, that's a rup.
The Athletic.